Blog Talk Radio.
Another show this weekend. We've been busy with shows this week, and we have more coming up in the next couple, 3 weeks. Before we get to today's guest, I want to go over what's going on at Groomer Talk. If you haven't been over, we're running a contest right now for Kinchi Shears. Three of you are going to win up to $100 each in your choice of Kinchi Shears. It's easy to play. Just come post on the board. There's extra trivia. We call it the Famous Sweethearts Contest, and that's because it's running to Valentine's Day. So you have until Valentine's Day to get over there, make some posts, and every time you post, you get a ticket in the drawing. Pretty simple. What's coming up next, thanks to Wall Clippers, we are going to bring back this year's Wall Pay It Forward Clipper Contest. What that means is if you win, and there will be one winner per contest, you get two clippers from Wall. Each contest sometimes can be different clippers. I don't know the models just yet, but we'll have those when that comes through from Wall. And what you do is you win a clipper for you, and then you get one more, and that you get to choose who to pay it forward to. It could be an animal rescue, local pet charity of some sort. Maybe there's a groomer in need out there. That's your choice, and on your behalf, it will be delivered to your choice. It's easy to play. That'll start right after Valentine's Day and run for 4 to 6 weeks, at least the first one, and then we'll be having another one. And because around that time, we also get started on the annual Rags to Riches contest by Double K. So we're busy with things all through the winter and into spring. So today, we've got Laura Hearn with us. Let me tell you a bit about Laura Hearn. She may be a new name to many of you, but she's not new to the grooming industry. She's been a professional stylist for almost 10 and a half years. And in the industry for 15 years. She first started as a corporate groomer and worked her way up the ladder and has worked in a variety of grooming settings, including luxury boarding facility, veterinarian's office, and a mobile grooming company as an employee. She started her house call grooming business named Lazy Daisy Pet Care in College Station, Texas in 2011. It was one of the first mobile businesses within 50 miles. She has since moved to Austin, Texas, and lives with her husband, Gentry, and three furry children, two dogs and a cat. She started speaking about house call grooming at educational trade shows in 2014, starting with the Atlanta Pet Fair. She has since spoken at a variety of trade shows, including the All-American Grooming Show, PetQuest, and Groom Expo in Hershey. When she's not speaking at many of these trade shows, you can find her at Groomer's Mall vendor booth giving tips and advice about all things grooming related. Now, to the point especially of this show, Laura has recently published a practical guide to house call grooming. That's the title. She published it in October of 2017. It's available as a paperback and an ebook through her website, Groomers Mall, Love Groomers, and Amazon.com. So I'm going to stop talking here and bring on, get her line going. Are you? Yeah, you should be there now, Laura.
I am here. How are you?
Actually,
good morning.
Actually, it's good afternoon, isn't it?
Afternoon. It's 2 o'clock in Texas, so that's perfect.
We're putting together a 120-page magazine. I'm already a few days late. That winter freeze really got everything coming in late to us. So anyway, we've been working very long hours, and I want to hear you talk. Let me just get started, and what made you get into grooming?
Well, first of all, I'm really excited to be here, so thank you so much. It is an honor.
You're welcome.
I've loved petgroomer.com since the very beginning. Before we had the Facebook groups, I'm always like petgroomer.com, and the Groomer BBS was always my go-to pages. And as far as grooming, I've always loved dogs since I was like a little bitty kid. My parents love to tell the story about whenever I was probably 3 or 4, I would buy dog biscuits with my allowance. And I would knock on neighbors' doors in the neighborhood and ask if their dog could come out and play. And after I embarrassed my parents for a little while, they were finally like, okay, we really have to get her a dog. And I wanted to be a vet for a long time. Once I actually worked at a vet's office, I was a kennel technician. I saw the actual insider scoop on what veterinary medicine is all about. That involved the not so pretty stuff like animals getting sick and animals passing away. And I just couldn't handle that, but I still wanted to work with dogs. So I figured out, I was like, okay, I'm going to make dogs pretty. So I went from PetSmart and then Petco, and then I just worked my way up.
So you've had a passion for animals for quite a while.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, right. Well, now let's see. Now you worked as I understand, as a grooming assistant until you went to college and were away from the grooming world for a while. What really brought you back to grooming?
Well, when I started at Petco when I was, or at PetSmart when I was 16, and I got the groomer bug, and I love it more than anything. I was, you know, everybody tells me, okay, you grow up, you go to high school, you graduate, you go to college, you graduate that, and then you start a career of something that you learned in college. And grooming in my head was not that master plan, but apparently it kept popping up everywhere that I went. I actually went to grooming school at the Petco Academy and undergraduate college simultaneously. I went to the grooming school in the summer, and then I had regular semester classes in the fall and spring, and I would drive 2 hours every weekend to go to the closest Petco. And what was funny is the defining moment of my life was when one of my college professors sat me down with my less than perfect grades and said, "Do you really want to be a dog groomer your whole life?" And that was kind of the light bulb moment, and I was like, yes. Yes, I do. And granted, I am grateful that I still went to that college because I got a degree, and that's actually where I met my husband. But after college, I was like, you know what? I am not going to do anything with this degree. I'm going to be a professional groomer, and I am going to not look back.
Well, I'm glad you came back. And now you're making some great contributions, bringing knowledge along. We have a lot of groomers, actually. I still notice at Groomer Talk Radio that they're starting out as a house call. So let's get right into the meat and potatoes here of the topic. Tell our audience, some may not even really know, what is house call grooming?
Okay, so I just figured it out. At first I was like, I'm the one that invented it. And a lot of people are saying, oh, well, I thought that that wasn't a thing and I invented it too. So basically it's something that's pretty niche still in the industry. It is a subset of mobile grooming in that house call groomers still go to people's houses, clients' houses, but the only difference is they don't have a mobile grooming van or trailer. The groomer brings the salon inside the client's house. They bring their table, they bring their dryer, they bring their vacuum cleaner, clipper vac, whatever that particular groomer needs, And then the only thing that the groomer asks for the client is they need to use their bathtub or sink and a place to set up their equipment.
And like when you moved to College Station, Texas, that was, I believe, 2011, you
yes.
must have assessed the area and you had to come to a decision that there's a need here in this area for this service. Did you do that?
I did. Before I moved there, I was like, well, I wanted to move to College Station because my brother went to A&M, or my brother was going to A&M, Gig'em Aggies, and I wanted to get out on my own and stop living in my parents' spare bedroom. And when I searched for mobile groomer in Google in College Station, the closest one was 45 minutes south, which was basically a suburb of Houston. So I knew what I did was is I kind of checked out the area, and I found out because Texas A&M is one of the only is the only vet school in the state. So it's surrounded by animal people and vets and students, and the fact that a lot of people are coming to College Station to get their elderly and their sick pets treatment, I definitely could see that there was a need for it, mobile grooming in that area.
And so by reading your book, by the way, probably you help people how to do that evaluation of their area?
Correct. In the book, it says the best thing to do is kind of you kind of do research, even if you don't are not but making a business plan in order to get a loan from a bank, you should still create a business plan for yourself to make sure for projections and mental stability, if you say. And what that does is it kind of has the building block of you not only have the research, which what you can do is it depends on the county, but a lot of places have they require the pets to be licensed in the county, and you can actually get that information, not necessarily names, but you can get the amount of pets that are registered in the county. And through that, you can pull and see how many of those pets you think would make good grooming clients. And that's the way to kind of assess the area. And then you can also do like cost of living and income, and because I found most of my target clients in College Station were not actually the students. They were more like the professors and stay-at-home parents and empty nesters who they wanted a dog that is becoming their brand new child because all of their human children have already gone off to college.
Great. Now, when you talk with other groomers and they hear that you're a house call groomer, what do they say? Anything special to you?
Well, it's always really funny because I get the raised eyebrows, and most fellow groomers, whether they're mobile or home based or a salon, are like, oh, I could never do that because I would not be able to either have people watching me while I groom, or hauling all of my equipment in. They like their own space. And as I tell them more about it, they're like, okay, well maybe people would be able to do that if they could figure it out. If they could work their way in and make it their business specifically. And it's great.
You know, I would think just obviously there is a market for mobile grooming, and you know, I think there's probably ideally, just off the top of my head, been in around 55 years in this industry, there is a market
mm-hmm.
for it out there almost everywhere. I just can't imagine it isn't. It's a great idea.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
What do you think is the most important thing for house call groomers to have before they get started?
Definitely liability insurance. I see a lot of house call groomers that are just starting out, and they say, oh, I'm only grooming my friends and family's dogs. And that's great, but even if you're grooming for those who are closest with you, you have to be careful in case something happens, because you never know. You just never know. And I end up, I have Governor's Hartford, and it's like $500 a year. It covers everything except for myself, and that includes if I injure or hurt the dog, if the client somehow picks up my stuff and cuts themselves with my scissors, or if I move my elbow the wrong way and I knock over a prized vase that was in the 1920s, my insurance would cover all of that. And I think that's the most important thing. Yeah.
A lot of peace of mind. That's barely one groom per month for
exactly.
that kind of insurance. It's well worth it.
It's definitely worth it.
Thankfully,
I have, knock on wood, I have not had to use my insurance yet, but I definitely want it there in case anything happens.
Indeed. Oh, well, let's see. What's the biggest mistake most house call groomers make when they first start out, and what's the prevention for that?
Well, I think probably the first thing that house call groomers do is they don't charge enough, or they don't think they're worth enough to charge more. And I think that I hear a lot of house call groomers saying, well, I'm using the client's electricity or water, so I think that's why I should be cheaper than a mobile groomer. But what I end up telling them is that even mobile groomers, they don't have to factor in as much the setup and the breakdown, because you have to bring in all of your equipment, you have to set it up, and then you groom the dog, and then you have to break it all down and then clean up after yourself. So usually even my regulars take between an hour and a half and 2 hours, so I can usually only do about 4 dogs per day. And when I was working in a salon in an 8-hour shift, I could probably do 8 dogs a day, 8 to 10. I mean, if I had a bather. So they end up saying it ends up working out. If you're doing less amount of dogs, you should be charging more, as well as it's a luxury service for the client as well. And
I agree.
The other thing,
definitely the way. Go ahead.
The other thing that I have done badly whenever I first started out was I forgot to put money aside for taxes. And the first year that I was in business, I was like, I don't have that much money. I don't have much profit yet, so I'm going to try to do my taxes on like one of those really easy self-employed TurboTax type things. And I ended up getting let's just say there's a very long battle with the IRS at that point. So make sure you set aside money for taxes and get an accountant as well.
I agree. And, you know, to me, it's sort of like, even yesterday I was talking with another guest about mobile grooming, and that there were mobile groomers that didn't set aside some money for the maintenance and wear and tear on the vehicle, and when they wait till they get this big bill, and it's kind of like
it's
much better to budget, just figure whatever it is, X amount of dollars per groom, put it in the piggy bank over here, you know, that fund
I do have an emergency fund for expenses that you don't hope that won't come up, but probably inevitably will. Even with house call, you don't have your van maintenance, but you do have your car maintenance. And I just got a new car, but my old car was about 15 years old, and it was, you know, it would break down every 2 to 3 months, and it was the really expensive stuff that started going, like the alternator and the carburetor and all that stuff. So I was like, okay, I'm just going to pull money out from my emergency fund and pay for that. And it's a very good way to say I have this and not scramble and not have to put it all on credit cards.
Exactly. You know, but I keeping track of mileage, you can take mileage checks usually. Always talk to the accountant, but I happen to know, because we've done it too, that it's okay. And those are tax-free. That's not taxable income, and that could be put away, you know, in the rainy day
exactly.
fund for the vehicle. Yeah. So
definitely.
Is there a special personality that is best for being like a house call type groomer? What are they like?
I would say if you want to be a house call groomer, you have to have a lot of flexibility and adaptability. Because every type of grooming environment except house call, you're in somewhat of your own personal space. You can have everything could be put in its own container, the table you like, the tub that goes up to your exact waist height, and everything is just perfect, pending any mechanical difficulties. And house call groomers are in a different environment for every single grooming appointment. So they have to make that particular basement, that particular laundry room or kitchen and bathtub work for them and work for the pet. For example, like if you have a Cocker Spaniel that's 25 pounds, I doubt that puppy would fit in the kitchen sink if it's a regular size kitchen sink. So you have to be really adaptable, and sometimes clients are like, oh, you can totally work in my small bathroom and you can groom the dog sitting on the toilet. And I'm like, no, I can't do that. I'm not allowed to do that. That's gross. And I always joke and say that house call groomers are kind of like MacGyver in that they can think up all sorts of ideas that it has to work in a certain room. And like, for example, I'm lucky in that I'm a small person. I'm a short person, but I know there's a lot of very tall groomers, and your stationary tables will only go up usually to about 36 inches. So if you're grooming a small dog, you need some height so that you're not killing your back. And most groomers just decided to get house call groomers decided to get creative, and they put bed risers on their table or PVC pipes. And I had a electricity go out in my client's house, and thankfully I had already dried the dog, thankfully, but I was able to finish the haircut with cordless clippers and a headlamp. And so it was just basically, if you can learn to be creative and flexible and ready for the unexpected, then I think you'll be a really good house call groomer.
Well, what are some of the challenges of being a house call groomer?
Well, this kind of probably goes a little bit along the previous question, so I hope I don't repeat myself.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of groomers who try to they try it for a little while because it is such a great way to be your own boss without the high overhead of a mobile grooming payment, van payment, or a shop payment, rent for rent. But they try it out for a while and then they jump ship before their business really takes off because they think that they can use the exact same equipment that they used in a salon, and it doesn't exactly work like that. For example, I know a lot of groomers love their K9 2 dryers because it can blow dry a collie in like 30 minutes or less, and that's awesome. The bad thing is in a client's house, most home outlets, if I remember correctly, are somewhere between 15 and 20 amps, and I know that usually the double motor for the K9 2 will pull somewhere between 18 to 22, so you could end up blowing a client's breaker if you end up doing that. And house call groomers may end up going through a little bit of time and money to figure out what works for them. So they may go through a couple of dryers and a couple of tables and then to finally find that what works for them. And also it does take a while to build up client loyalty because in a salon, I feel like even though in the age of the internet, people still drive by, especially if it's in a shopping center or area that has high traffic. So people will drive by or walk by and be like, hey, there's a dog grooming place there. I should totally check it out. And the mobile groomers with vans and trailers, they have the giant awesome wraps all over the vans so that they can travel all around town. And people can be like, that's a cool looking giant pink trailer. And house call, we don't really get that. I mean, I have, you can get wraps to put on your regular cars. It is a little bit expensive. I have magnets on my car for advertising, but as far as building up a good client base, it took me a good 6 months to a year to be able to do grooming full time and make profit. But honestly, advice for people who are in that trying stage, the very beginning, to stick it out, because I feel like the house call clients are the hardest to obtain, but the best to retain. So what that means is it's really, it may be hard to get them at first, but once they realize that you love their pet and they are inviting you inside their house to groom their pet every month, you will never lose them.
How about personal safety? You ever have an issue with going over to someone's house that's new?
No, but I've not personally had a problem, but I probably vet the client. I make sure that I do things very carefully, and I make sure that I vet the client is what I tell people. I get all of their information before I even commit to an appointment, and then I check their address on Google Maps to make sure that it's actually the correct address that they're giving me, and it's not like, you know, a boarded up warehouse or something ridiculous. And I call the vet to verify records, not only for shot records, but I make sure that their dog that they tell me is the right name, breed, and description. Because, I mean, I've had one person, and I really don't think it was him being malicious, but he was telling me all about his, and it was an elderly man, and he kept saying his dog in the past and present tense, and I ended up calling the vet, and it turns out the dog had passed away about 6 months earlier. So if I would have actually gone to the house, I don't know what I would have seen. Or anything.
Yeah.
And I also make sure that my husband knows my schedule. I have it on Google, both Apple and Android. I believe you can share your location with people. So everybody can see where you are at all times. So if there's ever an issue, I can always call my husband and be like, hey, can you stay on the phone with me until I give you, you know, until I make the initial contact with this person and everything is fine. And honestly, there's been a few times where there is no particular reason to not go to someone's house. As far as I could tell, I looked at the Google Maps, I looked at everything, but there was just that hair on the back of my neck stood up when I talked to the client, or I got there and I just felt sick. I just end up saying I can't go. I always listen to my gut, and it's definitely helped me so far. So I always tell people, no matter what, trust your gut. If something feels off, trust that. And even if you're inside and you're already set up, just look at your exit areas and pretend tell the client that you feel really sick and you got to go. And figure out something. So your stuff is not more important. Go back and get your stuff later, but your stuff is not more important than you, is the short version.
Right. Do you find from experience now that now mobile grooming clients can be very loyal? There's always that choice. Are house call clients very loyal? In other words, they might even book the next appointment sometimes, or they keep calling you, on some sort of basis. Are they the same way?
Definitely. They're my house call clients. Basically, most of them are wanting actually someone in the house. Like I have dabbled when I first started. I first was like, maybe I'll get a grooming van. just, and I'll do house calls first. And most, I've learned that most of my clients were like, no, we hired you because you don't have a grooming van. And it's not necessarily that they don't trust mobile groomers. Most of my, I specialize in senior dogs and dogs that need extra TLC or clients that need extra TLC. Either they had a bad experience with another groomer, or the dog is a particular, has a particular personality, or has a medical condition that truly it should not be in another facility other than its house. I do a lot of dogs that have seizures, heart conditions, the autoimmune blood disorder where I can't exactly remember what it is, but it's like they can't be around other animals for, basically it's like an immune system type of problem. And I mean, my clients are to the point where I, like right now I'm booked up until March. So I'm pretty much to the point where I'm not taking any new clients, and everybody wants to pre-book as we're getting payment. And I mean, I end up getting my clients Christmas gifts, and they get me Christmas gifts. And I've been to a couple of weddings, and they've told me about, you know, baby announcements and college graduations. And it's really neat because they basically invite you inside their house, so you see a slice of life once a month for like a couple of hours. So it's a very intimate experience between the groomer, the pet, and the client. And I really, really like that.
How many of them want to observe you while they groom the pet? And does that become a nuisance sometimes?
Most of the time I tell people it's easier to let the dog, leave me alone with the dog the first time and we'll see, just because a lot of times I tell people your dog fusses, when you're there, kind of like dropping off your kid at daycare. They whine and cry and fuss, and then as soon as you leave, they are like, okay, I'm going to go play because no one's looking at me. So then usually I end up getting the really good establishment between me and the dog. But I do, if they say they want to stay, I let them stay. The very first time, usually, most of the time when they figure out that their dog is fine, they get bored and go off into another room. If they want to watch me, I do give them rules. They have to they don't talk to me, or they don't talk to the dog, they don't touch the dog, and they have to sit at least 3 feet away. And if the dog starts acting up, which means if the dog is on the table and is only focused on the owner, and you know, I feel like it's going to be a dangerous situation where I'm worried I'm going to nick the dog, then I send the owner in the other room. And sometimes with dogs, I do a lot of senile and blind and deaf dogs that are not sure where the parameters of the table are. And with those dogs, I'm perfectly fine with the owner helping, or at least some, those types of dogs, the owner is totally, the dog feels more comfortable with the owner there, and sure, I'm happy with it.
What
and that's
about,
totally fine.
The groomers that are currently mobile, can house call grooming benefit them as well?
Oh, definitely. As Murphy's Law paraphrases, it's not if your van will go down, break down, but when. Or it's not if your van will break down, but when. And I know it's January and everybody is in all the groups everywhere. Everybody's like, oh my gosh, my pipes are frozen. My water pump doesn't work. I got to turn on the heater the whole time. And what happens if it pops the breaker in my house? And in the summer, I'm in Texas. So we have temperatures anywhere from like 100 to 110, and groomers who are working with the generators, a lot of the generators will shut off after the concrete hits a certain temperature. And so that just, it just ends up getting really frustrating for everybody. So if mobile groomers with vehicles are ever in that situation and they don't want to cancel an entire week of appointments due to weather or due to breakdowns, they can do house calls for that period of time and not have to worry about working extra or working on, you know, their days off. And also, if some crazy emergency happens and you have your dog is half soapy, half dry, and you're half soapy and your water pump completely goes out and will not turn on, you can scoop up the dog and finish rinsing them in their client's bathtub, and the groomer and the pet won't stress out if they know, you know, what types of things to look at for house call types of things. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. So
okay.
you're more than a house call groomer now. You've decided to become an educational speaker. You're an author now. What made you decide to go this route as well?
Well, I like this question because I love this story. I was at Atlanta Pet Fair in 2013, and I was in one of Daryl Connor's classes, and I love her. She's so awesome. The topic of the seminar was stories and inspirational wisdom that Daryl has learned over the years as a groomer. She did house call grooming about 20 to 25 years ago, and someone asked her in that class about house call grooming today. And since she had only done it for a little while and she had since moved on to other forms of grooming, she wasn't sure. And in that act of impulsive bravery, I guess you would say, I raised my hand and said, "I'm a house call groomer. What do you want to know?" And I admit I diverted the seminar a little bit in those few minutes, but she definitely seemed, everyone who was in the class was really happy with what I had to say. And after the class, I asked her how I could get into speaking because I really, really love talking about house call grooming. And she helped me get into touch with Barkley, and the rest is history. And she also went on to write the foreword for my book, and I really appreciate her for that.
Great. And let's talk about the book. Now, I'm going to say it again for the audience listening. Your book is called A to House Call Grooming. And
yes,
first off, I noticed I really liked the cover, too. It really, it just was real fun. Who designed your cover?
Melina at DMK Marketing is the one who designed, drew, and colored it. And for those listening out there who haven't seen it yet, basically it's a perfect spitting image of myself in cartoon form. And my Shih Tzu is waiting for me at the door, and I think they did a really good job, and it makes it really, really pop, whether it's on at trade shows or online. It'll definitely be like, I know exactly what she's doing.
And what made you want to write a book?
Well, I've been a member of both the pet groomer message boards for a really long time, and also, there's a Facebook group as well for house call groomers.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep hearing and seeing the same questions, including what insurance, should I get insurance? I'm charging $30 a dog. Or what table should I buy? What dryer should I use? Can I make my own bathing system? Stuff like that. And as nice as I am, I always repeat everything as I could. And there's not a book out there for house call groomers specifically. There's books for mobile, there's books for salon, there's books for business specific, but there's no house call yet. And also, there's only so much information you can cram into a one-hour seminar, and you wonder how much information the person will retain after they've taken 12 other classes and then fly home to their own. I really like it as a I hope people will use it as a reference book and go back to it if they have any questions or want to check something. So that is the hope and the dream.
Well, what are the main topics that the book covers?
Yes, it covers stuff like business, like getting insurance and taxes and sales tax and all the what I call the nitty gritty boring stuff that's not actual grooming, but it's equipment, safety, pricing, routing, scheduling, marketing, customer service. And I think that's it. There's probably a couple more chapters, but I, off the top of my head, that's the most important ones. And of course, that also is, I'm going to talk about it later, but there's also a chapter on cats.
Okay. What type of groomer is this book geared towards?
Well, it's marketed toward house call groomers, of course, but again, like I said before, mobile groomers can, with vans and trailers, can definitely use it, as pricing, advertising, and scheduling routing are pretty much the same between house call and mobile. It's the same information, just a little bit tweaked to whatever they particularly have. And any groomer, whether mobile, stationary, home-based, house call, who wants to jump from being an employee to being their own boss can pick up this book and read a few chapters and see if they're really ready to take the plunge. And topics like that, as far as, like I said before, topics include as far as that, sales tax, federal tax, hiring the accountant, the bookkeeper, stuff like that.
And certainly, you know, all the things that you've already mentioned, for the cost of a book, that just will, I mean, you're going to jumpstart way ahead. It's a, whatever the price is, it's got to be amazing. And,
yeah.
And to prevent expensive mistakes along the way. So it's certainly worth every penny, I'm sure. Does it talk
Definitely.
About cat grooming?
It does. It does. And throughout this interview, I've talked about dogs mostly because I don't groom cats. But my very good friend and veteran cat groomer, Chris Anthony, wrote the chapter on grooming cats in a house call environment. And it's I wanted to make sure that I included a chapter about cats because they are completely – not only are they completely different than grooming dogs, but they're completely different than grooming dogs in a house call environment. Some cats, it's their own turf and – so they think it's their rules and it won't work in house call. And Chris talks about the owner, stuff like the owner catching the cat beforehand, or, and she doesn't particularly like putting the cat in the kennel because then the cat will associate, well, I'm either going to get groomed or I'm going to the vet. So I'm already going to be mad. And different types of cat specific equipment, such as the air muzzle and soft claws. And she does bring up the topic of safety, such examples of not ever putting a loop around a cat's neck, doing the figure eight harness type of thing, and cat stress signals, like if you ever see a cat panting or something else that, or really, really, really big dilated pupils, that's like, okay, a cat can go from zero to off the walls a lot faster than a dog will. So we just definitely have to make sure that cats are kept safe in being groomed. And she also says a little bit on how to speak, how to speak fluent in feline.
Oh, that's cool. All right. Well, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get their hands on a copy?
Yes. Currently it's available on paperback on my website, and the link is apracticalguidetohousecallgrooming.com. And as far as the paperback, Groomers Mall and Love Groomers also carry it, and they will be at most of the trade shows this year if you want to wait and save on shipping. And as far as if you're looking, and the paperback runs at $45 plus shipping, and shipping is usually somewhere between $6 and $8-ish, depending on where you are in the U.S. And if there are groomers who are outside of the U.S., Canada, the U.K., and a couple of other places, I do know that Amazon also carries the paperback, And Amazon also carries the ebook, which is on Kindle. And the ebook is listed at $19.99.
That's a great price. All right.
Yeah.
Well, Laura, it's been nice having you here. Perhaps in
Definitely.
The future, we'll check in again with you and see how things are going and any kind of updates that you're doing. Also, I wanted to let everyone know that we also have links. There is a house call grooming forum, groomer.com, and there's a sticky message with the information, how to get a hold of a copy. And even on most pages at petgroomer.com today, in the right column under the sponsors, you'll find a link to this book as well to help get more information to it should you overlook some of the other information we just had here as to where to get a copy. And I wish you the well, Laura, with this. You know, we're
Thank
book
you.
Publishers too, and it really got us started on, you know, what do you do after you're a groomer? Well, you move into sometimes consulting and writing and publishing, and I'm glad to see you've really filled in a kind of a void there. So I wish you the best with this project.
Definitely. I always said if I couldn't groom anymore, and I hope that doesn't happen for a long time, I would want to teach. So I am. It's the best of both worlds.
Oh, right. Very good. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye.